Rum Variety, celebrating more than 115 years covering the business of entertainment. This is the Award Circuit Podcast.
But I am desperate to get back into the cinema. I've been grateful to be able to watch so many extraordinary things at home and with my family and you know, the two or three people who've tested negative who you can hang out with. But I am also, I really want to sit in the dark with a bunch of strangers and find this common laughter or the common gasp that you think, I don't know who these people are, but we're all having a similar experience. You know, and that's the same with performing arts as well as cinema. You know, I miss that. I really miss that. I miss live music.
For Cate Blanchett, streaming is fine, but nothing beats the experience of heading to a movie theater. I'm Clayton Davis. On this episode of the Variety Award Circuit Podcast, we talk to Cate Blanchett about her roles in Don't Look Up and Nightmare Alley, as well as her upcoming films, including Pedro Almodovar's A Manual for Cleaning Women, Todd Field's Tar, and Eli Roth's Borderlands. It's all next on this edition of the Variety Award Circuit Podcast. Stay close. Cate Blanchett picked up a Screen Actors Guild Award nomination for her performance in Guillermo del Toro's Nightmare Alley. On the BAFTA side, she was shortlisted for her performance in Adam McKay's satirical comedy, Don't Look Up. With her impressive turn in Adam McKay's film, Blanchett is a contender in what is easily the strongest field of supporting actress contenders in the last 30 years. Blanchett plays a TV news host who carries on an affair with Leonardo DiCaprio's character, a scientist who's trying to warn the world about an impending comet set to strike Earth.
Every time I try to ask you about your life, you seem to just tell me about your favorite restaurants.
Well, I just despise the, getting to know you part of relationships, so.
Oh, okay, I understand.
Okay, let's just get it over and done with. So, my grandfather invented the flash freezing process, so I come from grotesque money, but I got away from it by getting 3 master's degrees. I've been divorced twice. One was a Secretary of State, and the other one was a sport fisherman. I have slept with 2 former presidents. I speak 4 languages, and I own 2 monies.
Wow. 2 former presidents. Wow.
In Nightmare Alley, she plays opposite Bradley Cooper, playing a vixen of the film noir ages, a role that she seemed born to play. I recently spoke with Blanchett about being in the awards conversation via 2 different projects, Nightmare Alley and Don't Look Up. We also discussed her new venture with Pedro Almodovar, who she will be starring for in A Manual for Cleaning Women, his first English language feature, which she also produces. I began by telling Blanchett that her performance in Nightmare Alley may be my favorite role out of everything she's ever done. And that is a huge compliment.
You have the line of the movie for me when you say, I'll live. It's 2 words. It's right after Bradley is physical with you.
Yes.
And it is the line of the movie because you said it with such fire. I can only hope to be like you when I grow up.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, that's all Guillermo. I mean, he wanted a great entrance for Lilith. I mean, for all the characters. He cared so much about them all having their own kind of individual iconography and, you know, they're all cogs in this strange, dark machine. But he wanted them all to have a great entrance and a great exit. And so he really kind of labored over what Lilith's last line should be, because she's so enigmatic and unknowable. And then he finally, you could feel him going, ha, and he said, why don't you just try, I'll live. So he liked that one.
Oh my God. It's so great. You've had a great year because you also were in Don't Look Up, which was the number 1 movie on Netflix. And I think rising to potentially be the most watched Netflix movie of all time. Like, it's working up that route.
Oh, wow. Yeah. No, there were a few emails floating around saying that more than our grandmothers and mothers had seen. I mean, that's, but I mean, yeah, look, it's really a kind of a strange thing where I took, fortunately, you know, I decided to take the year off that ended up being the kind of the epicenter of the pandemic. And I agreed to do a few days with Adam McKay, who wouldn't. And Guillermo had this long, you know, labor of love, long lusted after project, which was Nightmare Alley. And he said, "Would you come and do that?" And you know, I was expecting to go in and out. And then all of a sudden, these things obviously took much longer to film, and they've both come out at the same time. But I feel so blessed to have spent that time. This time last year, I was shooting Don't Look Up, and the year before that was shooting Nightmare Alley. So it's sort of some strange sort of delightful time warp that I've found myself in. So I'm so pleased that that Don't Look Up's been resonating with audiences. And look, I really, really hope that cinemas stay open long enough in whatever blip we're in that they can see Nightmare Alley on the screen. Because the production, tomorrow's to production design and Lewis's costumes and Dan Larson's cinematography, as well as, you know, the attention to detail, both psychological and physical, that Guillermo always gives in all of the films that he creates. They're so sumptuous, and it's cinema in all its glory.
Yeah, I saw it at the Academy Museum, and big screen was definitely the way to go.
Oh, I haven't been there yet. Oh, yeah.
It was beautiful. It was gorgeous. And listen, I've been reckoning about saying that it could be my favorite Guillermo movie. And that means, like, because Pan's Labyrinth, like, means the world to me.
Yeah.
Nightmare Alley is like next level likeness of him. I loved it. So I have one of the most important questions to ask you from one of my colleagues here. It's about your costumes in Nightmare Alley and Don't Look Up.
Yeah.
In particular, the red and black dress. And it's fire.
Yeah, Susie, who did the costumes, was amazing, but we found ourselves in the middle of kind of a global lockdown, and so it was so difficult to get things in and out.
Yeah.
And that was just one I happened to have in my closet, so I said, I've got this black and red thing that I wore under something else, so no one will ever recognize it. It's kind of got a slight, not S&M, that sounds too kind of schematic, but it's kind of got a dominatrix kind of feel if we skew it the right way. And so, yeah, well, I called Armani and they sent it over. So that was just luck of having it.
Look at you getting a costume design nomination coming up here now.
No, it ain't me. I was just had to approve of it. Awesome. So that was a lucky one.
And Nightmare Alley, talk about those looks, because you might have been born in the wrong time period. I think you were supposed to be.
I often say that. I don't know which time period it is, but it might not be now.
Yeah.
Lewis Aquaria, who did the costumes, we'd had a mutual friend in common. And so I sort of met him before, and but to finally get to work with him was amazing. And I mean, I think all of the costumes he created for the characters, and they're so idiosyncratic, all of the characters in Nightmare Alley, but the silhouette for it was all given to me. I mean, most of my time was spent on the couch with Bradley in that extraordinary Rorschach test of an office. In those costumes, and you think, well, this is a bit of a, you know, no acting required moment, you know, or you have to live up to all of those kind of visual offers that you're surrounded by.
Oh, that's awesome. Looking at both roles, you're playing two very different women, both strong in their own right, that really take their destiny into their own hands. How did this differ from other roles that you played in the past? Because you played, again, amazing women like Carol and Queen Elizabeth and so many others.
I think it was really important for me to, I mean, sometimes you go in I mean, I always love jobs, and both of these were that where you've got, I don't quite know what this is, but I know it's something. And that was definitely, you know, going down the labyrinth of the dark night of the soul that is Nightmare Alley. You know, the fact that Don't Look Up was written pre-pandemic, you think Adam must have some kind of crystal ball, because every day it became more and more relevant and less like a satire and more like a documentary. But both the roles really, you're in service to the story. So the first thing you have to say, you know, particularly in, you know, Don't Look Up, is like, what is the function of Bree Ivanti? And so I, you know, it was so much fun. And working with Tyler Perry and with Leo again, who I hadn't worked with for a really long time. And that was what, you know, most, I had a high five with Meryl, which is the closest I've ever got to working with her, which was delicious. Yeah. But, you know, it was mostly with those guys. You have to say, what's your function? So that was my first kind of protocol. And, you know, obviously in Don't Look Up, it's to express just how far Leo's character Randall has gone from the epicenter of who he is, that he's ended up with someone like my character.
Yeah.
And I think in Nightmare Alley, it was a battle of the mind and spirit with Bradley, which was, I can't tell you how much fun it was to go into battle with him every day, you know, to see who'd emerge victorious. I think it's Lilith.
It 1,000% is, yes. That's not even like debatable. I didn't put this together because I forgot at one point in time Leo was supposed to do Guillermo's movie. So you would have two Leos this year.
Two Leos. Due Leonis.
Just beating him both times. Like, just keep Blanchett always victorious.
But you know, like, it's funny because, you know, there's a kind of a pool of, well, there's a lot of extraordinary actors, but there's very few people who could have played the role that Bradley did.
Yeah.
And in the end, when you have someone as particular as Leo and particular as Bradley, if you have one of those actors at the center of it, the movie skews in their direction, because it's led by their charisma and their take on the world and their take on the character. So, but in the end, I think that this hollowness that Bradley found, this dangerous emptiness that he found within the character, I think is really particular and could only have been found by him. And, you know, and Leo, he's as funny as a trout, you know, like he is a really, really funny human being, but he's able to, and you saw it in Tarantino's film too, is that sense of him able to parody himself and make fun of himself and make light of the character whilst never losing that kind of self-belief and intensity and drive. And there's a real kind of dufferish nature kind of to his kind of academic in Don't Look Up that I found really heartbreaking. You know, he's very sincere and he's aiming, he just believes that of course people are going to see reality. And unfortunately, like, you know, the world at the moment, that reality is the furthest thing away from any of our consciousness.
Yeah. Oh, awesome. Question about Don't Look Up that we've been thinking about, because there seems to be some familiarity at the end between you and Tyler Perry's character, Bree and Jack. When he says, like, should you guys do at the end about having sex? Do you think that they ever hooked up? Was that ever in the story that they hooked up?
I'd love to see that spinoff. I mean, they did that with the penguins in whatever that animated movie was. I think Bree has probably hooked up quite a few times with quite a few people.
Right.
And, you know, it's that thing you can say that it's opportunistic or it's vampiric or it's predatory, but in the end she's curious about people. And I think that she probably at one point saw Tyler's character as being, something to explore. But what I find, and of course the film doesn't deal with it at all, and that's what I love about what Adam does, is he really talks long and hard, like Guillermo. You know, Guillermo is obsessed by backstory, and Adam talks long and hard about, you know, the relationships and the backstories of the characters, so that even though the text doesn't deal with it. You get these fully formed characters that you can then riff off one another because you know where they're all coming from.
Awesome. All right, thank you. So maybe, maybe not.
Oh, well, I didn't answer your question at all. Yeah. I think definitely.
Yeah, okay. But it wasn't written in the script. Like there was nothing in there about it. Okay. No. So that was just you guys acting well and making it look familiar. That's good. Yeah. With theaters and streamers coexisting now, Don't Look Up again, barreling towards, maybe one of the most watched films of all time on the platform. Nightmare Alley didn't have as much success in the theater because pandemic and stuff, just all that going on. How do you see those two things coexisting like in the future? Like now that, once we do get out of the pandemic, hopefully one day soon, we get that, do you see that type of those two things living well together, that we can still save the theaters and streamers can live and do their thing properly?
Well, I think there's an enormous benefit that streamers can get by testing the mettle of a lot of their work by having it screened large. I mean, like a lot of people, we were all stuck home, and so we imbibed a lot of small screen or medium screen experiences. But there's something about and a film I made recently, the director said, I really need to go back and shoot that because I've shot it for television. Mm. And I'm wanting to make cinema, so I need to pull back. And I need to be judicious about when I go in here. And I think that when we all get used to seeing things in a particular way, whether it's large all the time or small all the time, we then start to direct our visual imagination only in one direction. And I think that's kind of, it can be a bit moribund creatively. So I think it's, and also I can only speak personally, but I am desperate to get back into the cinema. Mm. I mean, I've been grateful to be able to watch so many extraordinary things at home and with my family and the two or three people who've tested negative who you can hang out with. But I am also, I really want to sit in the dark with a bunch of strangers and find this common laughter or the common gasp that you think, I don't know who these people are, but we're all having a similar experience. And that's the same with performing arts as well as cinema. I miss that. I really miss that. I miss live music. I love listening to my LP collection, but I really want to. I want to get back into a club, into an arena, and hear that live. It pulses through you in a way because you're connected with an audience, and so I think that is something that streamers would be. It would be, I think, a creative misdirect to say that the small screen is the only way to go. It's got incredible benefits, but it's not an either-or situation, I don't think.
After the break, more from Cate Blanchett. From Los Angeles, this is the Awards Circuit Podcast.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
And we're back. It's the Variety Awards Circuit Podcast. I'm Clayton Davis. We're chatting with Cate Blanchett, the two-time Oscar winner who's a force to be reckoned with in both Nightmare Alley and Don't Look Up. When we left off, Blanchett was giving a passionate take on the cinema-going experience and why the movie theater is still so important to her. But she also mentioned other live events, including music, which led to my next question.
If you, because you mentioned it now I'm curious, if you could go to a concert today and you can make them go on stage and perform, where would you want to go? Who would you want to go see live?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I just walked through the whole nostalgic thing with Todd's Velvet Underground documentary.
Oh, yeah.
That was possible. Sonic Youth. Sigur Rós. I think that would probably be where I'd be heading.
Awesome. I love that you.
What about you?
Right now I don't want to be depressed, so I would need something really lively. So I'd probably go to a Mark Anthony concert, you know, just to like, I want to dance a little bit in my section.
Yeah, dancing's good.
Yeah.
But it's also just to hear someone with pipes of gold, like to listen to Adele.
Yeah.
You know, like small, you know, because people are doing smaller gigs now. And if you have that kind of the opportunity to be in a room with only 100 people and listen to those glorious pipes let loose, then that would be awesome.
Yeah, I probably want to go to a Bon Jovi concert too, maybe. Or Alanis Morissette. I would relive 1995 and say, Alanis, perform Jagged Pill for me, please.
Yeah.
So I, because I'm the Film Awards editor, I'm always so fascinated with awards trajectories, and you have one of my favorites, first getting your first nom for Elizabeth. And then it took us a while to get you back there. And I say we, because we fight for you, Cate Blanchett, because you became our yell at the Academy. Like, why are you forgetting about her and Talented Mr. Ripley and Bandits and Shipping News and Veronica Guerin? And then you won your first Oscar for The Aviator. And I want to know, can you take me back to that night? Because you weren't a sure thing that night. We didn't know if you were going to win or not.
No.
And one of the things I remember most about your speech was telling Martin Scorsese you wanted your son to marry his granddaughter, I think.
His daughter. I'm still working.
Yeah. I was going to say, where are we with that? Did that happen?
Yeah, yeah. It hasn't happened yet. They're young. Right. There's time.
Got it. So work on that. We got it for you. Yeah. But take me back tonight. What do you remember about it?
You know, I think I had a kind of I blanked because it was so, I'm an actor who's primarily worked in the theater, and I still, I've always got one foot in that camp. I love that direct relationship you have with an audience. And I love working in cinema, but I do miss that directness that you have, and so to find myself there in the room with the people and to work with Marty in the first place and to play Katharine Hepburn, I thought, well, this is a career killer. Yeah. And, my career has ended before it's even begun. And then to find myself there, it was surreal. So I can't remember. I think Tim Robbins presented it to me. I haven't thought about it for a long time.
Yeah, Tim Robbins.
Yeah.
He won the year before for Mystic River.
I think I thought for 6 months, oh my God, I should call him because I don't think I said thank you or you're a legend or any of the things you think you're going to say. But, that was back in the day when there weren't so many award shows. And in a way, the horse race was not as kind of
oversaturated.
I don't know what you think the pandemic's changed this, but it was just kind of it was a surprise that you ended up there, whereas it's talked about even before the films have been made, about expectation and it can be a bit of a killer, actually. Whereas for me it was pure joy. It was pure joy.
Well, as someone who built his career around that, I do understand the criticism of that, like talking about movies before they're even shot, about like what they're going to be able to do. And, I know you don't do it for awards. It's been a fascination because the Oscars are so the pinnacle of what actors want to, aim for. And it's been great to watch you go through that. Now, obviously, you go to Notes on a Scandal with Judi Dench. That's like that's a great Cate Blanchett. That's like up there. I love that Cate Blanchett.
I mean, throwing Judy up against a bookshelf. But she was like a ninja turtle. She was all suited up. But I mean, I just think everything Judy does is amazing. And watching her again in Belfast, you just think. And she was on stage not that long ago. She keeps having a second and third and fourth wind. And the lingering close up on her at the end of Belfast, I think was one of the most moving parts of the whole film for me. I could literally watch her in close up for for hours. And she's so such a blithe and generous spirit to work with. I only hope that I got another chance to do it again.
Yeah. We're lucky to still have her. I'm so glad she's here still. And then you won your Oscar for Blue Jasmine. Because you're one of the few that actually won a lead and a supporting. Did those feel different to you, or is an Oscar an Oscar an Oscar to you?
You know, I must say, because it's an industry award, it means not that other awards don't mean an enormous amount, but there's something. Just to be in that conversation, I mean, even to be considered. I mean, this is the thing where you feel disingenuous talking about it. Because, you know, it's all about the people who don't win as much as about the people. How do you feel that you didn't win that? And you think, you suddenly feel just so disingenuous saying, I was part of that conversation. I was, you know, my peers said that, you know, it was even a possibility. So no, it doesn't matter. I think because it felt, I played Blanche DuBois on stage, which Liv Ullmann had directed, which was, I cannot tell you what such an important creative relationship that's been for me with Liv. But it felt like it was a closure or an extension of that, even though, you know, no mention was made of Streetcar when we were filming. Yeah. It was, it still felt like a kind of a culmination of my time and a really intense decade of working in the theater. So it felt particularly special.
It's awesome. It's good. I have to comment on this, but I gave Guillermo praise and then I yelled at him for this. I love that we get a little mini Carol reunion in Nightmare Alley.
Oh, we don't, though. We don't.
You're in the same room. Which matters, because I screamed at him for not having Richard Jenkins and Mary Steenburgen share the screen to get a stepbrothers reunion.
I know. It was creatively irresponsible. It was
horrible. But at least we had you in the same room.
Yeah, it was perverse. We were in the same room. And, you know, she was brunette and I was blonde. So, I mean, I think there was one that we had one exchange in the snow, which was incredibly beautiful, very different to Carol, clearly, but that little moment got cut. So he even, you know, he became increasingly perverse in the edit room. So,
I'm going to get on for that. Looking ahead now, you have many projects coming ahead. You wrapped on Tar, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, with Todd Field. Yeah.
Which Todd Field movie? I needed it 10 years ago. I hate that it's taken them this long. But what can you tell us about it? Because it is my most anticipated thing ever.
You know, it was a life-changing experience for me. Yeah. It seemed that he and I had been thinking about a whole lot of stuff simultaneously in parallel. And then he wrote this script about ostensibly about a female conductor's fall from grace in a very male dominated environment, but it's not about that. That makes it sound like it's too schematic. I think it's actually about the creative process and what happens when people get close to the epicenter of power and authority in a creative position. It's also about a midlife crisis. It's about so much. About the relationship of the self to who one is in public, and all of this stuff had been circling around my head, just because we haven't yet assimilated what the Me Too movement has meant. Or what Black Lives Matter has meant, what systemic racism and systemic abuses of power. We haven't assimilated what any of that means in our industry. We're trying to deal with it, but we're also remote from one another. And so all of this stuff came to bear in this story. And I just felt sometimes it's a real privilege to just find yourself in a story that has nothing to do with your own personal experience. It couldn't be further away from my personal experience. But yet you get a chance to kind of sit with all of these really big questions. And so, I'm And Hilda Gunnarsdottir has done doing the score, and I'm finally working with Nina Hoss, one of my favorite actresses of all time.
That's what I'm so excited about.
Yeah, so I'm really excited to see what it becomes.
Also an Oscar snubby. She should have been nominated for Barbara. She's incredible.
Wasn't that is one of the most beautifully understated, deep performances. I mean, all her performances are, but Barbara was a beautiful, beautiful film.
Christian Petzold. I can't wait to
imagine. I had the privilege in the first year of the pandemic of heading the jury at the Venice Film Festival, and he was on the jury, and hanging out with him was really, yeah, it was That's great. Awesome. And Veronica Franz and Joanna Hogg, and it was a really great jury.
Eli Roth, Borderland.
Yes, that was fun. And it was Kevin Hart and Jamie Lee Curtis and one of the great humans. I mean, I adore her. And Gina Gershon, you know, who I adore. You know, like it was a really great bunch. And it's from a video game. And so, you know, it's sometimes when someone asks you to do something and you think, wow, I never get asked to do that. I think that was a bit like Don't Look Up, you know, like you think, yeah, I'll run toward that with open arms. Sure. And I'm sure, like a lot of people, in that first year, like the end of 2020, actually, I just wanted to get out and run and have a whole bunch of silly fun, because everything was the weight of responsibility and trying to hang things together for the family and for your community and making things work. I just thought it was a couple of months of sheer irresponsibility on a fictitious world. So that was a lot of fun.
And the last two is he told me a little bit about it, but you're teaming up with Pedro Almodovar, his first English feature, A Manual for Teen Women.
Yes. I mean, we're both great Lucia Berlin fans, and her all her collections of short stories have resonated with both of us for many, many years. And we've been talking about working together. My son's 20. So I think we began the conversation.
I can't believe he's 20, by the way.
I know. We've got to talk to Francesca. This has to happen. So we've been talking since then, and there was an opportunity to work together, and the dates didn't work out, and so I'm really excited to be moving forward on this one finally.
Yes, and then the rumored one in the works, maybe Francis Ford Coppola movie.
That would be fun.
Uh huh. With Zendaya and Michelle Pfeiffer and Oscar Isaac, who I believe, again, we almost got Lucy and Ricky Ricardo with you two. It was close to happening, but didn't happen. Listen, I love Nicole Kidman, so it's fine, but it would have been great.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it became the movie it needed to be. You know, those things happen in the right way at the right time, and in the best possible way, you don't always envisage the same thing. And so then it goes on to become a different entity. But yeah, no, I'd love to work with Oscar. And I mean, if when Francis calls, you just have to say, yes, because you're on the epic life-changing adventure ride. That you're on that roller coaster.
So we're ready for that. So what we're saying?
Yeah, I'm ready for that.
That's awesome.
That's Kate Blanchett, star of Don't Look Up, now streaming on Netflix. And Nightmare Alley, distributed by Searchlight Pictures, is playing in theaters. That's it for this edition of the Variety Award Circuit Podcast. The Award Circuit Podcast was edited by Drew Griffith, and Michael Schneider is the producer. Be sure to subscribe to the Award Circuit Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. Also, head to Variety.com and click on the Award Circuit tab to find the latest Oscar predictions and key races, as well as your daily fix of news, analysis, and reviews. Join us next time for an interview with Licorice Pizza star Alana Haim. Until then, for Janelle Riley, Jazz Tanke, and Michael Schneider, Clayton Davis. We'll see you on the circuit.